Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Well, well, well. Mr.
Wow.
Sullivan.
Ah, Mr. Jackson.
Since you arrived first, maybe you get to welcome me to Cloudlandia. Is that what it is?
I do. But you're in charge of the operation, so even early, I'm still a guest.
That's funny. Well, welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what a week! This has gone fast.
You know, I had a thought, and I'll just bounce it off you because I've written it down as a possible future title of one of my quarterly books.
Okay.
And here's the thought, and I haven't, you know, I developed my thoughts through conversations, so this is the kickoff. And I was this is a thought that was coming to me throughout the previous week when we were at by Zoom on Abundance 360.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought is that the future, your future is always normal. Okay. So that's mm-hmm. the statement. And then in the subtitle, it's your past that gets better or worse.
Oh, well, that's interesting. And
so what I'm saying is, and I was on a podcast interview. I was a guest on somebody else's podcast, a person who has sort of mastermind groups, entrepreneurial mastermind groups, actually in Orlando. He's not too far from you.
Mm-hmm.
And, he said, can you talk about something, the, imposter syndrome? You've probably heard of this being talked about, you know, people who are successful, but they feel like imposters.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, as it relates to entrepreneurs. And I said, yeah, I said, I've actually given quite a bit of thought to this. And I said, well, first of all, half of them are.
So it's real. Imposter syndrome is real, for sure.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, they should have a syndrome. They're imposters. So,
yes.
So, but I said, if I take the other half who are actually real achievers, but they're not feeling that way, I think there's two explanations for it. And one of the explanations is that they are living in a world that none of their background really prepared them for. So their childhood, where they grew up, the economic conditions they came out of, you know, whether they were, you know, could have been small town and now they're living in a city, and, you know, and they're doing activities that didn't even exist, 20, 30 years ago, using capabilities that didn't exist. And I said, I think it's not that they're imposters. It's just that they're living in a new reality that they haven't quite wrapped their minds around yet, and it doesn't seem as real to them when they compare it to their old reality of where they came from. So that's mm-hmm. one explanation. But I said, I think the other thing is that they've achieved really big goals, and this goes right back to the beginning of our procrastination conversation that launched the podcast. That when you imagine a big what in the future, goal, where things mm-hmm. are bigger and better, one of the ways you motivate yourself is to feel now the way you want to feel when you get there.
That's true.
And I said, but the problem is that when you get there, it just feels normal. You know, when you actually get to where you are, it feels normal. And that normal that you feel doesn't compare with the emotional transformation you thought you were going to have when you got there.
Mm,
you know,
that, yeah.
And
yeah.
we got, and And we have all sorts of, you know, stories about this. Astronauts who, you know, had nervous breakdowns after they came back from walking on the moon. And, you know, that when they got back, here they had done something that had never happened, that humanity has dreamed about for thousands of years, and they get back and, you know, today feels kind of normal. So it doesn't measure up with what they thought was going to happen to their notion of themselves. People, when, you know, there'll be people who are on the Super Bowl field today, and they're on the winning side, and about halfway through next week, feels normal. And, you know, mm-hmm. people win Academy Awards, feels normal. People become millionaires, it feels normal. So I said, I think, you know, I said, first of all, discounting the half of people who actually are imposters, and they should feel that way. The other half is comparing the present with the past, where it does feel kind of strange, or comparing yourself with the future, that when you get there, it doesn't feel the way you thought. And you use the word imposter to sort of explain how you do feel. That's just my thesis here.
That's an interesting thing, because I've been wondering about, and this is kind of related, but do you think there's a role of, you know, you talked for a long time about writing daily what you want,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
In journal, like, and I've done that for a long time too. Writing, I often take the temperature of what do I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's something about I don't know what the right word is, yearning. Or desire, or having, you know, the aspiration for more, I guess. I don't know. Wonder, like, I'm thinking, if they aspire to something that they get, and then they feel like, that you're there, kind of thing. How that, and it's like yeah. you said, it's kind of empty.
Yeah. You know, remember, I forget who the singer was, Peggy Lee or somebody like that. Is that mm-hmm. all there is? You know, there's sort of a famous, is that all there is? You know, and she's talking about various stages and changes in her life. And she's left with the same feeling after each of the changes. Is that all there is? And, well, let me ask you a question. When you have journaled and you have written down what you want, what's the continual feeling as you're doing that day to day?
I like the, like, what I've had a grasp on, I think early on, is that this is it. Like, right, there's only now. That this, yeah. you know, it's, there's no, that was kind of the idea of pushing the accelerator pedal to get to what, aspirationally or whatever, to see what you want, but then to recognize, how will I know when I'm there? You know, and that was when the statement, I know I'm being successful, when came in. I did put a lot of thought into carefully choosing those things. Like, I was saying that, you know, my number one thing was, I know I'm being successful when I could wake up every day and say, what would I like to do today? Mm-hmm. And so I look at that. It is great. And it's, and if I look at the shadow of it, if I look at the opposite side of it, that how has that maybe limited me in some ways, or how has that made me avoid certain things that may have been a better outcome for me? And who's to say what better is? I mean, when you get exactly what you want, everybody is. Mm-hmm. I think we all feel that same thing of knowing, you know, but I looked at it and I still feel like, wow, wouldn't, if there's something great about being completely in control of your days, of knowing, you know, wake up every day and say, what would I like to do today? Opens up, there's a lot of stuff there. But I look at, you know, other people that I am around, and I look at, like, the funny thing was I was playing golf with Tony Robbins, and we were talking about, I know I'm being successful when, and this was in January, we were playing, and because he had watched this interview that I did with Joe Polish, where we were talking about, I know I'm being successful when. And we did it at Dean Graziosi's studio. We were the first thing that Dean needed something to practice, or his crew was needing to break in his new studio years ago. And so Joe and I went over and just off the cuff recorded this 1 hour interview thing. Mm-hmm. So, and in any event, we were talking about, I know I'm being successful when I wake up every day and say, what would I like to do today? And Tony looked at me and said, dude, I don't have one of those days until March. And this was January, right? And yeah. It's an interesting thing because I see that in you in a lot of ways, that I look at your perhaps the most detailed, scheduled out person that I know that's in my life. That is, like, I know that we've got podcasts scheduled for the year, and you've got all of your workshops scheduled for the year, mm-hmm. all of your, and so there's a different, you know, there's a different element. You're waking up every day with, here's what I'm doing today kind of thing. You don't, mm-hmm. And I don't know that they necessarily are in contrast, because you're not waking up and, you know, well, today you've got to go, like, you know, dig a ditch or something. It's like you're waking up, you're doing things that you enjoy doing, but they're already planned. Everything is all handled all around you, and you're in an environment that you really, that you like and you've chosen. But just on the day, you don't have that flexibility on the day to, if somebody flew into town or something, to be able to drop everything and go spend a couple of days and golf with them or something.
Yeah. I would say that there's been one change. I think you've described me rightly. In other words, I think it's very, very accurate. And to a certain extent, that's the way I want it, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I find a certain tension having to make things up on the day that, I don't really like. The big change has been the COVID lockdown period, where mm-hmm. I got 30% of my time back, because a lot of my having my days planned and, you know, looking forward at the future required daily travel, even within the city, and required lengthy travel on a regular basis to go to Chicago and other spots, and mm-hmm. all that time got returned this year. And I didn't fill it up with anything when I got the mm-hmm. time back. I said, this is a once in a lifetime gift that this year has given me. And I said, I'm going to just take it that I've got 30%, I would say 30% of my day back that's unscheduled, and I'm just going to leave it unscheduled. I'm not going to fill it up with anything. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is I have this idea that when I'm really tightly scheduled, I'm not leaving room for magic.
Right. Okay. That's my thought. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. So what I've gotten back, and I said, I'm not going to, take this time and do what I've previously done with my time. I said, I'm going to have like a 30% slack time in my daily schedule. At least if, if I take 7 days in a row, some days are different than others, but on the week, if you compare it a week of my time now as compared to last year at this time, I've got 30% more slack time. And I said, I'm going to secure that going forward. I'm going to leave 30% slack time in my schedule because mm-hmm. I want to open it up for just being alert and curious about things and sort of leaving it. So this has been a great game for me. I mean, I'm sticking to my previous schedule, and there's four things every quarter that are regular activities, quarterly book, my podcast schedule, and my workshop schedule. And in addition, we've created the connector calls, the in-between sessions. And so those are like four things that seem to be good for me, and they seem to be good for everybody who's impacted by those other activities. So I do it, but I said, I'm not going to suddenly fill up my schedule now that I got some time back with extra activities. I'm going to just stick to those four.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is as close to retirement as I'll ever get.
Which is so funny, that's what I'm constantly thinking about, is that, on the days, like you've really changed, the way I think about that, because I don't see ever retiring. I look at you as the 22 years ahead kind of thing, and you're my example of what it's like at 76, to see what that's soon to be 77, right? And so you see that's kind of, I look ahead there at, I would say and argue that you are at your peak right now. Would you say so far? I mean, in every measurable way that you would look in, your creativity, your reach, your economically, the size of the company, the global reach, everything is, you're certainly not in the wind down or blue chip stage of anything. It's on the way up, and that's inspiring, So I don't see that ever changing. And I also have this, fondness for looking back at, 22 or 25 years ago and what was going on in my mind as I'm thinking about my thinking, looking at my days and looking at my schedule, and it's such an insight. Like I look at, I'm looking, I'm going to read.
But I
something.
See, reversing the perspective here, we're all unique. In other words, we get, if you're thinking about it as cards, we get a deal, we're dealt a certain set of cards, at the start of life and throughout life, we get new deals and everything like that. And I get a sense that you're for the game that you want to play, you're playing your cards right.
Yeah,
looking at it from the outside. And I said, you seem every time I encounter you, whether it's individually, like we're doing on the podcast, or you're on, in person in workshops or in everything else. I don't see, anxiety and distraction and everything. You seem to be present and everything like that from the outside. And I said, I think it's cool. And I think it's cool. And, it's the toughest skill for any individual in this world today to actually pull off is being present.
Mm. That's really the great thing. It's funny how, when you look at the rhythm of your days, like I'm looking in a journal now from what would be August of 1998. And, I'm looking at the things, like I would be asking things like, what do you like in every day? Like it started, you realize how much of things that we do are just repetitive daily things. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you always, when you think about sleep and exercise and reading and watching TV and writing in my journal. Now, this is interesting because there's no, no mention of like the internet as a, part of an integrated daily part of my routine, because it's not yet at that level. It's a tool right now. It's like I wouldn't be journaling about my fax machine in 1988, right? The internet wasn't really the internet in 1998. And that's an interesting thought to me. But then, about 4 hours of work and it was kind of the rhythm of a day that I like. And I've really gotten my time now to kind of exactly what I really want. Most days are most standard weeks. I have Mondays and Fridays, nothing scheduled, and then nothing scheduled before 1 p.m. And then on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, all of my scheduled things happen between 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Client calls, podcasts, Zoom meetings that I'm initiating or being part of, with the exception of the Breakthrough Blueprints, which I have one starting tomorrow, that those mm-hmm. go from 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock on those 2 days, Monday, Tuesday, mm-hmm. tomorrow. But the lead conversion workshops, the email workshops, those all fit in that afternoon time yep. slot. So I've really gotten to a point where I've successfully kept almost all of my time free, basically, at my discretion. And
yeah, mm-hmm. here's a thought that what you're doing, if I just take the way Dean, the way that you actually live each day, but then how you have created a structure and a process for future days to a certain yeah. extent, because, my feeling is that mindset drives behavior and behavior yeah. drives habits. that it starts with mindset and then it becomes conscious behavior. And then if it, if the behavior satisfies the requirements of the mindset, then we try to make it automatic, we'll push it forward. we'll push it forward in time. And what seems to me, I mean, the whole point is that at the heart of the way that you're thinking about, today and the succession of times in the future, it's totally unique to you. Like nobody else on the planet has the criteria. Nobody else has the experiences. Nobody else has the capabilities to design Dean Jackson's day any better than Dean Jackson can. You're 100 times better at designing a Dean Jackson day than any other human being, because they have the foggiest idea even where to start.
Right. That's true. For everyone. That's true for everyone.
And I think that, going back to the start of the conversation, the imposter thing, somehow there's a yearning. You used the word yearning, so I'm going to pick up on that word, it's a weird thing, and it comes from the separation between being an individual on the one hand and being part of social networks, in other words. And yeah. I'm not even talking about things like, the social media or anything. I'm just saying that, 6,000 years ago, people lived in social networks, that there were people, but that there's this sense that at some point in the future, I won't feel that it's just myself. I'll be connected to everybody else. I'll have this feeling of being part of humanity in a larger way than I feel today. And my feeling is that that's a thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thought,
Yeah.
People have all sorts of thoughts, and that's a thought. And, it's an interesting thought to think about. But if you're using that as some sort of standard of measurement sometime in the future, probably you're not going to feel it.
Can I give you a great example
of that?
Okay.
There was a story this week because Tom Brady leaves New England after 20 years, goes to Tampa Bay, and
right,
guess what?
All
the people on the New England team are watching the Super Bowl on television today, and Tom Brady's doing what he usually does on Super Bowl day. He's playing in the game.
Exactly. Yes.
So last week, after they won the conference championship, beating Green Bay, and they were in the locker room, and some of the players broke down crying. And Tom Brady sat down across from me. He says, "What are you crying about? We haven't done anything yet."
Yeah. That's great, isn't it? I mean, for a guy who's been there, being
able to go to a Super Bowl game was almost like the culmination of their dream. And he said,
"Yeah.
Well, this is my 10th one." And he says, "Yeah, we haven't done anything yet."
That's amazing. It'll be interesting to see how it ends up here. But
the way he's trained his sense of being present in relationship to possible future events is at a much higher level than probably anybody else on the field today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine he's got more experience at it than anybody, really. Yeah, that's something. I mean, it is. I wonder how that relates to when we have these visions for, like, would your schedule now is essentially, how long have you been doing this model of your, like, as long as I've known you, that's kind of been your model here, workshop days, 3 days.
Yeah.
It started
when I started using the strategy circle in 1982 mm-hmm. as my coaching model for one-on-one coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say 1982, but by 1984, I had come up with a structure that this would be a quarterly thing. We'd have a first meeting, and then every quarter, we'd get their original strategy circle done, and then every quarter, we would review it. And then approaching a year, they would decide whether they wanted to do it for a year or so. I did that for about 5 years, and I was up to about 40 one-on-one clients.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they paid up front. The other thing is that everybody paid up front. So I had the mm-hmm. business model down pat, and I had the quarterly structure down. And then I was just saying, I'm selling my time. To a certain extent, we're always selling our time,
mm-hmm.
Regardless at what level of achievement we are. And that's when Babs and I said, we've learned enough about what's true for everybody that we can put it in a workshop where we can have, we thought we could get up to 20 people in a workshop. And, that's how, but that was big, because they weren't paying the rate that they would do if they had me just individually, but they were paying, mm-hmm. they were paying 70%. So probably a 1400% gain if you could do it on a workshop basis with 20 people.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't think unless we had the internet, especially the database apps and everything that came along, we could have ever gotten too much above that number in a workshop. But once you can take care of the details with technology, then it got bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because that, you have replaced what was, you talk about the 30% time that you mm-hmm. that you got back, that you haven't replaced. You've also consciously taken away the television, and mm-hmm. So the television, for many people was something that was a constant, and then you layered on top of that the internet as another layer, but without taking away from television time. So
yep.
The total dopamine drip is quite extensive, quite a long time during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've tapped into
I think the television time got replaced with reading. So my I had a lifetime habit of reading, mm-hmm. and so I would say that probably all the time I freed up from television got replaced immediately with reading, and a lot of it was novels.
Mm-hmm.
My number of novels I read. I like novels because they're a beginning, a middle, and an end. Like they're a complete, whereas nonfiction books, oftentimes they create a lot of openings, but they don't have any closing. And there's, on television, what do we like most? We probably like stories, that mm-hmm. have a beginning, a middle, and an end,
Yes.
Yeah, and
yeah,
there's something very satisfied by having, an experience, but it starts and it's got a middle and it's got an end. I think that's very satisfying. But, the parts of television that aren't based on stories are kind of they're kind of anxiety producing because they open something up, but there's no end to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you experienced, Dan, Clubhouse yet?
Not yet. I got a project because Lee Richter is going to be my guide to it. And uh-huh. I said, I'm going to send you an impact filter on what I'll send you a copy of the impact filter.
Okay.
But I said, this is, you know, my reason for being interested in it. This, you know, it's a project I'm going in. And, you know, this is the difference. I've heard enough about it that I think it's different from anything else. And, you know, and the best would be that, one is I really love it and I really enjoy it. And, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, it's intellectually stimulating and, I meet and am introduced to all sorts of people that otherwise I wouldn't be. The worst would be if it, it started making demands on me, you know, and that I would be started making commitments
right.
and obligations that
right.
I don't really feel like doing. And, you know, and then I'd write down the success factors. This would be the ideal. And then I'm going to send it to her. And she was cool with that. She said that that's great. Because mm-hmm. Lee's a multiplier. Lee's a 100% yes. multiplier. You know, she just likes
yeah.
connecting people. She just likes.
She really does. Yes.
She really loves it. And so I want to. And she said, that's cool. She said, I'm on it a lot. And I'm in a lot of different clubhouses. And I'm in a lot of different
yeah.
conversations and everything like
yeah.
that. And I said, well, that's great. Well, you'll be my guide then.
Yeah, like I wake up, I've had my experience of it has been that I would, you know, you can scroll through and see the rooms that are happening right now, like the conversations that are going mm-hmm. on. And there may be, you know, 100 people, there may be up to, I think the biggest room I've been inside, 1400 people in
wow.
the room. And so it's been a really interesting thing that I've gone in and they, you know, the moderators can see, you can see everybody who's in the room. So I've had, you know, several occasions where I go in and then they see that I'm in the room and they'll go, oh, Dean Jackson's here. Let's bring him up and get his opinion on this or get it. Dean could talk about this. And so, you know, I've gotten up and we've talked about the migration to Cloudlandia and I've talked about mm-hmm. the VCR formula and I've talked about, you know, all kinds of different things. And it's a pretty, you know, as I have done that, I have, you know, 2,600 followers now on Clubhouse just from people being in the room and then say,
sure.
oh, that guy's interesting. Let's follow him.
Yeah.
But it's basically, it's on all the time, Dan. You can literally
yeah, I know.
Tap in. I did an interesting thing. I started a room of my own and just on a whim, I said, 10-minute marketing makeovers with, or 10-minute marketing hot seats with Dean Jackson. And open it up. And then I open the room and instantly people start gathering in the room. Paris Lampropoulos popped in. And so you know, I brought Paris up and Paris and I basically just started helping people with
yeah.
their marketing for an hour.
Yeah.
And then it's
yeah.
over. And so you could tap
do they,
into
is
it.
A Q, is a Q&A too? I mean, do they ask you
oh,
questions?
Oh, that's exactly what it is. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's really, it's intriguing to me, but, you know, one of the things I was reflecting on, because there was, very valuable new presentations at A360 on longevity. And, Peter mentioned me, you know, 5 or 6 times during mm-hmm. the session, you know, because, he's the only I'm the only other person in his life that had set a, you know, like a very, very advanced longevity goal and had been with it long before Peter met me. I mean,
right.
I set the goal in 87 and he met me in 2010. So I'd been at it for, you know, I'd been at it for 23 years before he got to me. And, you know, and, yeah, I mean, it had already been in the program. I mean, tens of thousands of entrepreneurs had already done the thinking on this. And, Peter, not there, but he asked me, he says, what's been the biggest impact for you for having that goal? And I said, just that I've got a massive amount of time to get to anything I need to get to. And I said, I'll hear about something, but I don't have any sense of urgency that I have to take advantage of it today.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
No, I'm 77, and, you know, I have a sense that everything, and I've got the last book, you know, the $15 trillion Prism. Well, that's my big project. I said, this is my big project, and it, you know, and it's going to take thousands of who's between me and, you know, 2044. And and I've got, you know, I've got enough who's to work with right now to develop intellectual shortcuts and the new ways of collaborating. And besides, technology is going to do all sorts of, exponential things over the next 20 years or so. So as it comes along, we'll take advantage of it. But there's no urgency. I don't feel any sense of urgency that there's something new that I absolutely have to get to. You know, I have to set aside things that I'm doing now to get to this new thing. I don't feel any urgency about that.
Yeah. That's so awesome when you start to think like that. Like I look back now, it's funny how we're constantly, I look at the now, when you think about the future, we're kind of constantly looking to set up something that's got legs, like a 25-year future to something. Yep. But I also realize that there's a lot of things that you can't even have projected in those 25 years, right? Because looking back, I realized how it's primarily, you know, there's chapters, there's different things that create new opportunities if you're alert and curious.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 2020, go back 25 years. It's, 1995. Okay. And say that you were predicting a sudden 1 year shift totally to virtual conferencing.
You couldn't even, virtual conferencing wouldn't even have entered your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't even a thing. I mean, email was just getting started in 1995.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and so you think about that, it's like, so, you know, I look at the routines, like the daily routine, you know, back then when I first moved to Florida, 97, I would wake up and I would go for a walk, and then I would go for breakfast and get USA Today, and I would read USA Today every day. Just like I would read it from cover to, take my time with it, like read it from cover to cover, look in the classifieds, look in everything. And that's where I found Homer McDonald for, with Stop Your Divorce, by being alert and curious and, having that
responsive daily. And resourceful, responsive and resourceful. Yeah.
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 And it's an interesting thing that, now, of course, the internet allows that, that you basically do that same thing. I'm fascinated by these daily rhythms because on my Kindle, I have a book that Richard Rossi recommended. I forget what it's called, but it basically outlines all these daily routines of creative people from you know, all the way back to the 1700s or whatever mm-hmm. was known about their daily routine. And it was funny to hear, you know, that sleep was always a part of it. Napping was often a part of somebody's mm-hmm. Daily thing. But certainly there was a long walk involved in the day. There was a period for correspondence. You know, that was a fun thing to hear about. People would do their correspondence. And then gathering with friends, you know, for a meal or for, you know, at the end
drinking,
of the drinking day kind of thing. Tea. Yeah, drinking, exactly. That was the thing. So it was interesting to see how the writers, you know, would write for 3 or 4 hours a day, or the artists or composers. Yep. It was the same thing. You're doing, I don't know that your capacity for actual creative output is more than 3 or 4 hours a day.
Yep. But
that might just
be, I mean, I think that the, you know, if you think of that, you've got two things to play with. You got the brain that you were born with, you know, and mm-hmm. You hope you got good early training, you know. I mean, the big thing is that you got, like you learned how to read, you learned how to write, and you've learned, you know, you learned enough math to know a profit from a loss, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is your mind. So I make a distinction between brain and mind. Brain is your inside operating system, and mind is your ability to access other people's brains. You know,
So say that again. So brain is your
brain is your internal constant ability to make sense of your experiences. So you're uh-huh. you're constantly having experiences, and you've got to kind of create a sense making in the center of you, that whatever is happening to you, it kind of makes sense enough to you that you feel confident about tomorrow. I think the big thing is I want to feel confident today. I want to feel confident about tomorrow, and tomorrow I want to feel the same way. About the next day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we notice that, you know, as we learn language and, we learn to communicate, that we can benefit enormously from how other people have thought about their experiences and have come up with, strategies that are immediately understandable, and you don't have to go through all their experience to get the benefit of what mm-hmm. they've learned, you know, and that's our mind, I think, mm-hmm. and, you know, and the big thing is don't screw up your brain, you know, as you're going through life, don't screw up your brain. Uh-huh. And the other thing is keep expanding the quality and the quantity of other brains that you can have access to.
Ah, I got it. That's interesting.
And we're always going back and forth between the two, because more and more, as I've gotten older, my experience, like people said, you know, in the future, you'll be able to, travel virtual reality to exotic places that you've always thought about. And I said, I have been to probably 20 places that were called exotic in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to the conclusion that they're all the same when you get there.
The exotic, yes, exactly.
They're all the same, and a day there is not too much different from a day here.
Day trip from the exotic Four Seasons in that same location is enough, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And but on the other hand, I've noticed that being in conversation with more and more interesting human beings keeps getting better. So if I have a choice between traveling to a place or traveling to another person's thinking, I'll opt for, I'll travel to other people's thinking.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. I did had a neat thing, other people and thinking, being able to see things. I was really thinking, and I've said it before, about the capital allocation is really the intellectual game. It's the ultimate who, not how, actually, is being able to pick the thing that's going to win, or that's going to be a good idea, and backing it with your money, with capital, is without having to do any of the how. You have to do the how. It's truly about finding the who. If you believe that VR is going to win, it's about finding the right who also believes that it has the best chance to execute.
VR is going to be VR is going to be a winner for somebody. You know, I mean,
I think
senses,
like practical.
Well, first of all, VR is already a winner for lots of different people in the world.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
The military, the stuff that they can do with VR right now would blow people's minds.
And it's right.
But it's crucial for them to be able to rehearse and pre-plan military missions without, without actually going there and, it's so funny. I've developed a new habit. I'll think of a question and then I'll ask Google the question. I'll just punch it in. And I would say only about 25% of the time does Google have a good answer for my question.
Right.
It gives me little bits and pieces based on the words. But one of them, there's been about three or four articles because the Chinese said they forced a U.S. ship to get out of the South China Sea this week. And I said, we'll see. Anyway, so I asked the question. I said, what would the first 24 hours, this was my question, what would the first 24 hours of a all-out war between the U.S. and China look like? Okay. And I just put it in there. And, and lots of people said, well, this is something that can't happen and everything else. And I said, that's not the question I asked. The question I said is if there was a first 24 hours.
Yeah.
And the reason is because the U.S. has rehearsed probably 1,000 times what the first 24 hours would be like. So all the information on this is top secret. That's what my search did. And I said, the U.S. has 1,000 times more experience of the first 24 hours of something than the Chinese do, because the Chinese haven't actively been in combat since 1979. That's the last time they were actually in combat. So that's 41 years. Chinese military person has actually been in combat. Well, the U.S. is in combat today, tomorrow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. They haven't stopped since 1913. Right.
constant practice. And so my sense is that, and then I went back and looked at Desert Storm, when Iraq invaded Kuwait.
Yes.
You know, and then there was this buildup, you know, it was like a 6-month buildup, you know, like senior President Bush, George Bush, the father, got 26 different countries, and they had like a 500,000 military personnel. And then there was the first 24 hours. And basically, the U.S. did about, U.S. and the allies, the Brits and everybody else, they did about 50 different things on the first in the first 24 hours, and that was that was 29 years ago. Can you imagine what they could do in the first 24 hours now?
So yeah, I don't think it would even last 24 hours. I mean,
well, it would. It would be deeply confusing to people who have never been in combat. Yeah. So the big thing. But it was an interesting question. One is that there wasn't good material on Google to really answer the question, you know. And you know, it was pretty. There would be a meeting of the United Nations. I said, United Nations? No, there wouldn't be a meeting of the United Nations.
Right.
It would be scheduled. It would be scheduled for Friday, but the war would be over on Tuesday, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting. And but more and more, I just find I'll go through the day and I'll think of a question. And I'll say, gee, I've got a question. So I go to Google and sometimes I hit it right on the nose. There's somebody who's really thought through this topic, and it's worth it, you know. And it's worth it. But my sense is that your Clubhouse thing, you're more likely to come across somebody who is in the general conversation of Clubhouse than Google.
That's interesting. I wonder, you know, you can attract, I guess we're just sort of getting the lay of the land with Clubhouse right now, but I imagine that
I think there's going to be levels. I think there's going to be lots of levels to Clubhouse.
Yeah.
And you're going to prove it by being having something useful for the other people in the room.
Yeah, like I'm looking, it seems to be the, people are gathering in, you know, these known rooms kind of thing. But I think there's all these little, the fact that anybody can start one is a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think you're going to be a big hit on, you're going to be a big hit on Clubhouse.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And, that's what I'm afraid of.
Right. Exactly. I feel it too. I feel it too, Dan. That's exactly
the
thing. It's like, you know,
You know, I mean, both of us, I think, we put out feelers. I mean, I think both of us, when we go for something, we go for it big, but we, it's got to satisfy lots of requirements in our minds before we do it. You know, and the fact that you like it is a big plus for me. I mean, I wouldn't have gone any further with the inquiry except for your first descriptions of your experience. And that's when I, you know, I started listening in. Mike Koenigs and Lee Richter and others were talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is you,
I don't you and feel, I have.
I would say you and I, anybody who has ideas, great things to contribute, and is able to articulate your thoughts on the fly, is going to thrive in an environment like that, or stand out in an environment like that.
Yeah.
So,
and I get a feeling anybody who's a ranter gets cut out really fast.
Yeah. I agree.
And that's what I like about it. I think that it was so funny because we have this ongoing discussion group here in Toronto. We're just, I think we're closing in on 19 years. And every quarter, a book gets recommended, an actual book, and then people send in articles of things of interest during that quarter, yeah. and that's constructed into a book of articles. And mm-hmm. somebody sent in an article, and it was some guy in London who wrote this really, really ranting article yeah. about how dumb Americans in North Dakota are now the hotspot for COVID in the world. North Dakota is now the hotspot for COVID in the world. And I said, North Dakota. And so, I went through it, and it wasn't really about North Dakota. It's just that he thinks that America is the dumbest place on the planet, and Americans are the dumbest human beings on the planet. And, that they're not obeying lockdown orders, they're not obeying mask orders. So, the article came in, and so what I did is I looked up the author. I said, this is... first of all, it was from November, the end of November. And when you use a statistic, that's 3 months in the past, you really, really got to check out whether there's any point to it. Well, as it turns out, that North Dakota is like number 10 in the United States as, as a position. And but I look up the author, and every one of his other articles are attacks on the United States and on Americans. So I wrote the, our discussion group member, and I said, I just want to tell you something here. First of all, the statistics are completely out of date. They're 3 months old, but they're in the headline. And I said, New York is number one, New Jersey is number two, Massachusetts is number three. You just go down the list, and then North Dakota is sitting at number 10, is there. But I said, just put this in perspective, the population and the economy of North Dakota is the same as Mississauga.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That's something.
Yeah. I said, so, we're not talking about New York, which has, 28 million and, 28 million and everything like that. And I said, this is probably the first time in history that North Dakotans have been closer than a mile apart from each other.
They each get a mile. I wonder what the density of North Dakota is.
Actually. Well,
they measure it in.
If I take Mississauga, geography is 1,000 times bigger, but they have the same population, everything. But I said, one thing to do when you come across an article that has some bite in it, check out the author and, what's the history of the author is. And you can do that today because all the authors want to be well known. So you check out. And I said, if the guy's a ranter, every article is a rant about something. Your article is probably not going to, be useful to the other people because rants really aren't useful.
This is where when I think about VR, I think about it not just about the goggles or visually, but meaning full immersion in access to Peter Diamandis used a great term that I loved for it called perfect knowledge, where everything that's knowable is knowable at your fingertips, like being able to look at Alexa, how many square miles in North Dakota? She must. I must have her out of this room. She's in here. Alexa, how many square miles in North Dakota? No, she's not in here. She must have. Philip must have taken her.
Yeah.
But to be able to know, I'm seeing that now. that all of that stuff, that's a knowable number. So to be able to make that thing and say, just quickly look at the population of North Dakota and the square miles of North Dakota compared to the population and square mileage of Mississauga.
Yeah,
and you look at how much.
Well, they're both they're both between. I've just looked at. I looked it up because I wanted to make a statement that was plausible in answering the letter. And so, you know, they're around 770,000, 780,000.
Yeah.
Both of them, North Dakota and Mississauga.
Right. Right.
And, you know, and the GDP is about the same because, you know, North Carolina, North Dakota is a big oil and gas state, you know, so, I mean, Mississauga is very dense and, you know, a lot of economic activity there. They've got the airport right there. So there's a lot of stuff that's right there, but you know, it's, comparable. Yeah. The GDP of North Dakota is the same as Lebanon. So if you take a country, you can take American states and position them against countries.
Yeah.
You know, like California's got the same economy as France. Texas has an economy that's a third bigger than Canada.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. These are big. I tell them, you know, the states are, I mean, Florida. Florida's huge.
Florida's on the move.
Oh, yeah. Florida's.
We're gaining 1,500 people a day right now for the next 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, this is redistribution year every 10 years based on the census that take place. It takes place on the decades. So, you know, 2010, 2020. So they just have the census. And there's a redistribution now of 7 congressional seats, and Florida gets 2 of them. Other states will lose congressional seats. So Florida and Texas both pick up 2 more congressional seats.
Well, I think over the next 10 years, as the Northeast drains into Florida, we're going to bring those seats down here. But I wonder if it'll change the political balance in Florida.
Well, it depends on who the states now. So Florida will be told you now have 2 more congressional seats. So depending on who's running the state, you have a governor who's a Republican, right?
Yeah.
And what about the legislative, you know, the two bodies, the the state Congress?
We're pretty red all across. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then it'll be a bad time for the Democrats because what they'll gerrymander. So this is where gerrymandering comes in. And what they'll do is they'll take an existing Democratic jurisdiction and they'll cut it in half. Okay. And they'll, you know, they'll spread, they redo the lines and they'll make sure that the Democratic district, say it's 60-40 Democratic right now. What they'll do is they'll divide it into 2 districts and they'll make the Democratic one 90% Democrats and the other one is Republican.
Right.
They'll pick up. So probably because of redistribution, because all the ones who are gaining are Republican states and all the ones who are losing are Democratic states.
Yeah.
That just nothing else concerned, there would be a pickup of 7 seats for the Republicans and 7. And right now it'd be pretty even. It's there's 2 seats that are unaccounted for because one person is a Republican and his seat hasn't been filled, and a Democrat went to the Biden administration. So they're shorts, but both of them will probably go Republican. It'll be 221 to 214, so it's seven. So just automatically it would switch. And in off-year elections, the party with the White House generally loses congressional seats. So anyway, but the U.S. is so funny because it's everything. It's a constant shifting and shuffling and everything. That's probably one of the most active geographies on the planet in terms of things shifting economically and politically.
Well, but not in Cloudlandia.
Not in Cloudlandia.
No borders in Cloudlandia.
That'll be interesting to see if does Cloudlandia have internal borders.
Well, is this it's interesting, and this will maybe be a good topic to pick up on our next one.
Yeah.
You're starting to see now the fracturing even of the deep level that the I think you're going to have a red internet experience and a blue internet experience.
Yep.
Chinese
one and the rest of the world that one. We're used to that in Mainlandia, so maybe some mainland skills will
exactly
be useful getting to Cloudlandia. Anyway,
right.
Great pleasure. I'm on for next week. So
me too. I wouldn't miss it.
All right. Thanks.
Have a great week. Thanks.
Have a great blueprint.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.